Mr. Shaw, Reel 9. Now, talking about the sinking of HMS Harvester on the 7th of March 1943, and you just got onto the Carley float and you were sat in the middle clinging on to both sides.
Right, grim. Right. And we'd been in the water quite a few hours before we saw the first...
Now, what was it like during those few hours? Do you see what I mean? What was going on round you? What could you see? What was the sea like?
Well, the sea was pretty choppy, but it could have been worse. But it was, you know, you can imagine the North Atlantic in March. It was very cold. I got the sensation after a while of numbness gradually creeping up, slowly, short, and up, you know, all the way up here, all the time. Couldn't do anything about it, just sitting there. And I suppose, I don't know exactly how long, in the end, I think our float had been in the water about 6 hours when we were finally picked up.
So the coal was gradually getting worse. Could you see, were there many men in the water or any other Carleys?
Yeah, there were some more Carley floats. And there were also one or two men, in fact one of them was a chum of mine, who was a very excellent swimmer, and he'd, and another ERA by the way, an ERA, and he'd swam out and he was hanging on to one of the masts or something, you know, and he wasn't on a Carley float, but I knew it was him because he sort of shouted out, he wasn't far away.
Couldn't he have swum to a Carley or a...
No, this was the nearest he could get, you know, swim. Anyway, and there were one or two others you could see around, but we were all in the float and that was it.
And what were men doing in your float? I mean, what was...
Well,
they
were trying to cheer one another up. You always get one, don't you? And he was special, and he was trying to cheer everybody up by singing, "You Are My Sunshine," Bing Crosby song. I was singing that as the ship went last, after the ship went down. Yeah, being, I always remember every time I hear that.
And what about, how did you all feel? I mean, were people...
I sat in the middle not saying anything. And they weren't all miserable. We just sort of sat there, hoping for the best. And waiting to see a sign of a ship arriving. And eventually we did, smoke on the horizon, from that direction. I don't know what the direction that was, mind you, but and it was the turned out to be the aconite.
How do you spell that?
A-C-O-N-I-T. French crew. And lo and behold, it started dropping depth charges while we were in the water, and we could feel the... Mind you, it was a good way away. And of course we didn't know what the hell was going on. Of course it suddenly dawned on us it was depth charging the submarine that had sank us. And it sank it. It got it. So the aconite sank that U-boat. And then started to pick up the German survivors first. Which was understandable. But in the meantime, quite a few of our people, because they'd been in the water so long, cold, were dropping off, you know. And they took a while to pick up the German survivors, half an hour or so. So that was anyway, that was just one of those things. And then the last thing I remember for a while is smoke on the horizon this other side, and it turned out to be the Narcissus. And it was the Narcissus, people on the Narcissus that picked me up, and I was the last one off the float. And oddly enough, three or four years later, I met a chief stoker in Malta, and he said, "Don't you recognise me?" And I said, "No." And he said, "You ought to." He said, "I pulled you off the raft."
How did they rescue you? I mean, what was the...
Well, the raft came alongside. There were great big waves going up and down, so they had to wait until you got to the top of a wave, and then someone would lean over and grab you, or those that were capable of jumping in them. But I was left in the middle. He said, "You were in the middle of the raft." He said, "Your knuckles were dead white." He said, "And we shouted out to you to hang on." He said, "And then I suddenly realised you were nearly gone." He said, "Your eyes were all glazed." He said, "So that..." He was a big hefty chap, this. He said, "So the second time you came up," he said, "I leaned over and grabbed you and hurled you onto the deck." And I said to him, and did I say, oh, my leg? And he said, yeah, you did, actually. I said, I can remember saying that. So I must have been sort of nearly gone, but not quite. So there you are. So that was me being saved.
And what happened then? I mean, because you can still die. I mean, you know, I mean...
Well, the next thing I knew, I was... had nothing on in the nude, big blanket over me, and the coxswain of the Narcissus saying to me, drink this, will you? And it was a drop of soup. And I took one sip, and I was sick all over, salt water and everything. And then he said to me, can you identify this body? And it was my chum, you know, the one who was a good swimmer. Apparently, he tried to swim to the ship, and he was down below, and he must have got some of the blast from the torpedo, because his hair looked grey, and I suppose the shock combination of that, and the fact that he was a good swimmer, and he probably thought he could swim it. If he'd have probably stayed put, he might have been all right. And so they buried him at sea, and I'm standing there, I'm half had to watch him being buried at sea.
How did they treat you? I mean, what sort of medical treatment did they give you? Because you'd been going colder and colder up your legs.
Well, had this suit. There was a chief ERA on the Narcissus was the engineer officer. They didn't have an officer. It was a small boat. He let me have his bunk. And they looked after me. Nothing special. Because...
They didn't give you a warm bath or anything?
No. Well, I can't remember. Yeah, I think I did have a bath, come to think. But, I wasn't with it for a long time. And we carried on with the convoy. So every time the submarine alarm went, I nearly had a fit. But we arrived in Gorik.
How did it badly affect your nerves?
Not really, apart from when the alarm went, when I was on the Narcissus, and I thought, oh, if it happens again, sort of business. But I was dead lucky. I was the only one saved in our mess. There were 58 survivors out of 198, and I was one of those. So we lost 140. And there were only two of the original 58 survivors we picked up from the merchant ships who were saved again. So all that lot went. So yeah, I was dead lucky. I was up, didn't get any of the blast because I was still in the mess. Normally I would have been down somewhere down below, and I'd have, well, I don't know. So there you are. I mean, it's just pot luck, isn't it? And I didn't know, of course, until we got in, arrived in Gorik, how many survivors there were or what. But there you are, that was it. The chief ERA had gone, and the senior ERA, and this other young, my pal, and the young one who was on loan, I didn't see him at all. Whether he was in that boat or not, you know, that was being lowered, I don't know.
And what about survivors' leave? Or how did they treat you when they got you ashore?
Yeah, we got survivors' leave. We got to, my wife was still in staying with my aunt, so she came down with me. I think it was the midnight train. We went down to Chatham Barracks. So she came down, and we got fortnight survivor's leave. And that was the usual.
And what state were you in? How long was it before you felt back to normal?
Well, I lost a bit of weight. I was never, I've never had much weight anyway. But my average weight was about 9.5 stone, but I went down to about 8 stone, but that soon came back again. But I didn't feel, how can I put it, I just felt I was lucky. That was it, you know.
So what happened after the survivors leave?
Well, I went back into barracks. It was Chatham Barracks at the time, and I think I was there probably about 3 or 4 weeks, and then I was notified that I had to get my gear ready and go up to Greenock, the Clyde, anyway, Greenock, Gorik, and onto the Queen Mary, and we were going across to Asbury Park was the base. It was apparently, this was two hotels which had been known to the British Navy, and that was our temporary barracks.
Now, what do you remember of the trip on the Queen Mary?
Before it was great. We, we went over on our own because we could. The Queen Mary, as you know, could do 30 knots or more, and part of the upper deck superstructure was roped off. Nobody was allowed in this particular area. Well, we didn't know at the time who it was, and we did get a bit of a clue because during our spare time, if we were playing cards, then Beaverbrook, you know Beaverbrook, he would walk through, you see. And you say, "Hey, you're getting on then," and you speak to him and say, "Oh, not too bad, I'm not winning much." And he would pass through. So we knew he was on board, and that was it. Didn't know anything about anything. When we arrived in New York, and everybody got off, Churchill had been on board. Winston Churchill, we didn't know. It was all kept secret, obviously. I mean, obvious reasons for that. But we didn't see him. We didn't see him at all. But he's gone over to meet at Roosevelt, obviously one of the meeting days. So that was that. But one of the things that really struck me, and of course some of the others as well at the time, was that we, when we had our meals, it was just like being in a hotel, even in those days. You had a menu. I never heard of this in the Navy. You ate what they put down in front. But it was a menu, you see, and you were waiting. Yeah, like this, and of course we lapped it up, you see, but of course it didn't last.
What was your mess deck like, or your mess?
Oh, that was pretty good. You know, it's just like, it wasn't, don't get me wrong, it wasn't the same as it would have, it wasn't luxurious, but compared to what we were used to, it was, you see. So that was pretty good, And it was a fairly decent trip. I mean, one or two of the, or quite a few of the soldiers, had quite a few soldiers on board that were seasick, but most of us, to us it wasn't, you know, it was just a bit of a gentle roll sort of business, and we were all right. So,
which from port that point, did you pull into?
Pardon?
Which port did you go?
Only in New York. We left from Greenock and then straight over to New York. I think, if I remember rightly, I think we took a northerly course. I'm not sure, it could have been the other one. But anyway, we didn't go straight over, you know what I mean? Sort of a long, obviously, to avoid the U-boats. I don't know whether there was a Commodore on the Queen Mary, or anyway, the person in charge was obviously told by the Admiralty what route to take, you see? Especially with someone like Churchill. But anyway, that was quite a nice trip, actually. And I met another one of my classmates, actually. I didn't know he was going to be on it, but he was on this, and he was going. He didn't come to Asbury Park with me. He finished up in Syracuse because he was doing an electrical course, you see.
Now, what was your first impression of New York? This is supposed to be quite a...
That was the first time I'd ever got close to the Statue of Liberty, etc., etc. And, was sort of impressed a bit by the huge buildings, etc., you know, skyscrapers and all this business. But we didn't hang around there very long. If I remember rightly, we were off the ship and then onto a train and down to Asbury Park in record time. So we didn't really get apart from the harbour, didn't get a sort of a proper look then. And Asbury Park, and from then we sort of...
And this would be round about April 1943, would it?
It was April when we left, so we're getting toward, April, that's right, mid-April we'll say. And we had lectures. And
now, which of the hotels were you in? Do you remember, or what were the conditions like in the hotels?
I'm just trying to think. I think we had I'm not quite sure whether we had a cabin each or whether it was. I a couple of us in. I can't remember, to be quite honest, not for sure. But it was quite, I mean, as I said just now, after what we'd been used to, it was pretty good, you see. And they had the two buildings. There was a tallow building over there and a building over there, and this had been not commandeered, loaned to the British Navy for that purpose, you see. And people were there going to different parts of America for different courses, you know, depending what grades they were, etc., etc., and what courses they were going to do. And we were eventually...
What did you think of the food? That would be your first experience in America. The food.
The food was quite good. Quite good, yep. Good. Put it that way. So the food was good.
I mean, was it unusual to you? Because it's American food, wasn't it?
Oh, well...
Their diet isn't quite the same as ours.
No, but the... If I remember rightly, now this, I am saying this from memory now, nobody thought the food was all that different, except for the fact that it was quite good. You know, we were quite happy with the food situation. I don't know this for sure, but it may have been our own chefs, perhaps, who were doing the cooking. I don't know, but...
Now, What about American hospitality? They made arrangements for your entertainment while you're in Asbury Park. Do you remember much about that?
Well, the only things that I remember they had actually in the Asbury Park, they had table tennis, game, snooker and billiard tables, and darts, and all that, and of course radio and television, but nothing. There was nothing else. There were no sort of things like a dance or anything like this, but we were all sort of quite reasonably happy with
what
that.
What about tickets? I thought they provided tickets so you could go to things in the locality.
Well,
not that you remember, sporting events and shows.
Yeah, I know what you mean. No, I don't think, I can't remember. I don't think so. I don't think we had. I mean, I wouldn't bet on this, but I don't really think we had anything like that. We could go ashore, but we usually came back at a reasonable time anyway, 10, 11 o'clock at night. You know.
What would you do when you went ashore?
We'd probably just have a look around some of the bars, etc., etc., and that was it. But
now, what work were you doing? Duties?
Well, while we were in Asbury Park, we, each of us, could be called up for a duty patrol. And as I, at the time, as I was a chief petty officer, although I was only an ERA, if there was a patrol of, we'll say, three or four petty officers, etc., when I'd be in charge, you see. But this was a comical thing as far as I was concerned. The patrol would be sort of marched round by a petty officer, and I would be in a police car with two of the American policemen, you see, armed to the teeth, you know, they're armed, you see, and they'd be driving around this particular area, and I always remember saying to one of them at the time, I said, well, I mean, is it necessary for you to carry, you know, to be armed? I said, oh, yeah, sure, you know. And they're on about niggers, because in those days they had all this business and coloured people and so forth and so on. And at the time, I didn't really, my personal opinion was that I didn't go much on it. But having said that, I mean, I didn't really know the situation. So there you are. But as far as I was concerned, it was I was in the police car, and they were driving me around. And this went on from, I think, about 4 hours on and off, and that was it, you see. And then we'd go back, and we weren't doing a lot of this, mind you.
Did anything ever happen?
Well, not as far as I was concerned, nothing happened. I believe one or two others said there'd been a few incidents, but That was it, you know. I'm just trying to think of what... Most of the time, though, we went up to Brooklyn Dockyard. We had to go on a ship that was very similar, sister ships, in other words, to, or a ship that had similar machinery.
Was this Brooklyn Naval Dockyard?
Yeah, that's right. Ships that had similar machinery to the Calder, you see, so that we could familiarise, you know, we'd be, one of the chiefs would take us down. You see,
Know the Calder then. What machinery were they showing you? What?
Things like an evaporating plant, which was different from ours slightly, but and how it worked, and also the boilers and the engines. That was our, you know, the engine room side of it, and that was it. And then we also had to go. That's right. We had to go to a. We were given a lecture, not on board the ship. Oh, this is in one of the rooms, actually in New York. Given a lecture by somebody about different aspects of the ship, you know, what it was going to be like and so forth and so on. And that's the only time that we had to go through a bit of Central Park to get. And so the only time I've ever been through Central Park, and along Broadway, but just a little bit of Broadway, so I got to see those particular parts.
Do you remember much about the lecture? Because, of course, you didn't know the ship then. What was the sort of thing were they introducing you to?
Well, it was mainly...
It was about the captain class, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. It was mainly the size of the ship and how many people would be on board and the layout and so forth and so on. Most of the things that are forgotten now anyway. But as far as the engineering side of it was concerned, and they tried to describe what the main engines were like and what the boilers were like and so forth and so on, etc., etc. And then, of course, you'd have any questions and someone would ask the question and so. And this was it, you know, that sort of thing. And then I'm just trying to think how long we were at Asbury Park. 3 or 4 weeks, I think. And then we went... There were one, let me see how many, at the time there was an engineer officer, a chief ERA, and 4 ERAs at the time, and we all went up to Hingham Dockyard near Boston, and this is where the ship was being built. And we were based there in the barracks, in one of the American naval barracks, you know, in the chief's mess. And each morning, we were up at 6 o'clock in the 6 o'clock in the morning, there would be McNamara's band would be put on full blast, and then this ancient American chief petty officer with badges all his way up his arm would come around there shouting and shouting and bawling and making sure we got up. You had to get up eventually because you couldn't stand the noise, you see.
Now, that became a bit of a theme tune, didn't it, to the captain class and the Calder, you know.
Well, McNamara, yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I probably remembered it, you see. And the din was terrific. You couldn't, even if you wanted to stay in, you couldn't eventually. And I always remember the... we thought he was old. He was probably only about 40, but he was old to us. He always used to think it was a big joke. You know, he'd be going around, and some of the things he'd come out with would be let go of your cocks and grab hold of your socks, you know, and all. And all this, and of course that amused us, but he wasn't nasty about it, you know what I mean? We got up, you couldn't stand the noise, so you got, and we'd be down, they had a canteen, a lovely canteen, down near where the ship was being built, and if you go in there and get to, well, you know, the American type of milk and so forth, you paid for it, but what were we allowed? We were allowed a bit extra, while we were over there. I can't remember what it was now. I don't know whether it was a dollar a day or something. The dollar was worth 5 shillings in those days. And you bought your own breakfast. And then we were on board the ship by 7 o'clock. And
now, what were your first impressions of the Calder then?
Well, our job at the particular time was to make sure we knew, familiarise ourselves with the different machinery, the different pipelines, trace the pipelines and where the valves were, etc., etc., you know, all this sort of thing. And this is what, and making diagrams of it, sketches of it. And this is what happened, and this how long did this last now?
Now, what were the differences? Can you just go through? Because they were completely different engines, were you? It was a turbo-electric engine.
Yeah, that's right.
With twin screws. Now, that's not usual in the Royal Navy, is it?
No. This was the, I think that was the first time that that particular type of ship had been our Navy had had them, put it that way. They had the turbo-electric and then the diesel-electric. There were two types, actually. One was the turbine, obviously, and the other one was the diesel, which did the same thing, you see.
Now, can you just sort of describe this turbo? Because it must have been new to you as well, although you'd seen perhaps some in Brooklyn. But how did it work, and how soon was it before you grasped how it worked?
I don't think it took us very long, actually, to get the hang of it, because we did. When we were at Brooklyn Dockyard as well, that sort of thing was explained to us anyway. And one of the big differences was where on most of our ships, the throttles, you know, were wheels. You'd open a big wheel to let the steam through. But with these, they were levers. You know, like on a railway, you know, when the signalman on a railway pull it, well, levers, and the telegraphs were slightly different, almost the same actually, but on theirs, whereas on our telegraphs you'd have stop, slow ahead, half ahead, full ahead, and then the stern would be the same, slow astern, half astern, full astern, but on theirs it would be a third ahead, but apart from that, not a lot of difference. And the levers were, you got used to that eventually. You got the hang of how much to let the steam, the power through, you see, and that was it. So although obviously there was a lot of difference, but as far as we were concerned, not too much to worry about.
Well, they were very much more electric, though, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, You had the. I'm just trying to think of a way to not only give you a good idea, but to remind myself. Now, wait a minute. Yeah, fairly simple way of describing it. Whereas in most of our ships, you'd have a steam turbine driven by steam. On the turbo electrics, this would be like a dynamo, and that was driving the shafts and the propellers, you see, and that was the turbo electric. With the diesel electric one, of course, it was the diesel that was doing the driving the shaft.
What generated the electricity? Was that the oil, burning of the oil?
Well, you still had the boilers. I'm just trying to think how many boiler rooms there were on the Calder. 1, 2. No, I'm lost. Anyway, you had the boilers, which were slightly, although they were similar, they weren't exactly the same. They were similar to an ordinary steam boiler, you see, and with superheated steam. And they produced the power which drove the dynamos, you see. And that was it. That's the main. I can't. I'm just trying. I'm trying to make it look a bit.
That seems alright. Now,